I deconstructed my mother's last night, countless times, as summer segued into fall that year. I described everything I could recall for my father, for the police, for myself. I talked it through with Heather Prescott when we were sitting around her dingy apartment in Burlington just off the UVM campus, and with another of my high school friends, Ellen Cooper, who hadn't gone to college but was making what seemed to me at the time to be scary amounts of money designing jewelry and candlesticks at a pewter smith in Middlebury, when she would stop by my house on her way home to Bartlett. The thing I kept coming back to was how pedestrian my mother's last night really was. There were no warnings, no ominous asides, nothing that could be construed by even the most rabid conspiracy theorists as foreshadowing. My father was a time zone to the west at his academic conference, scholars and professors dissecting poetry. Because he was going to be gone for 2 nights, it had crossed my mind that my mother might sleepwalk. It had crossed all of our minds. After all, it was only when her husband was gone that she would arise at some point in the night and embark upon one of her journeys. But she hadn't left her bed in the night in nearly 4 years, at least that we knew of, and wouldn't my father have known, which was why my father was even willing to leave for the conference. There had been some discussion that my mother might accompany him since I was home and could look after Paige, but it had never struck me as very serious. My mother had her own work here in Vermont. And so this was the first time that my father was leaving Annalie alone in their bed since her work at the sleep clinic had, my family believed, given us a course of treatment for her somnambulism. Proper sleep hygiene, no alcohol, hypnosis, which in the end my mother felt had not been a factor, and, most importantly, a small tab of clonazepam before bed. The clonazepam, perhaps in concert with her antidepressants, knocked her right out. She slept, it seemed, without waking. The polysomnographs of her brain when she was on the drug were fascinating to the physicians and technicians at the sleep center. They actually showed montages of Annalie Ahlberg's EEGs to students at the adjacent medical school. Nevertheless, my father reminded me to be alert. He said, his eyebrows raised, to refrain from any recreational activities that might diminish my attentiveness. But I had just turned 21, and my father knew that I would approach this responsibility with the appropriate gravity. I was a grown-up. And I had indeed taken my father's words seriously. I hadn't partied that night at all, even though it was the end of August. I had stayed home and watched TV with Paige, petting Joe the barn cat. We were as likely to call the 18-pound bruiser Joe the barn cat as we were Joe, even though he had lived inside our house for 5 years now, when he would jump into my lap. I had slept with my door open. I reassured myself that I had brought my naked mother in from the bridge when I was 17. I reminded myself that I had awoken in time to save half our hydrangea from being asphyxiated by silver spray paint. I would awaken if my mother left her bedroom. I would let no one down. And I took comfort in the reality that I myself hadn't gone sleepwalking in 15 years. I had experienced a relatively brief, not uncommon pediatric arousal disorder, and I had outgrown it quickly. No one believed it was worrisome. No one considered it a sympathetic reaction to my mother's sleepwalking, because it had preceded her nocturnal forays by nearly a decade, by nearly 10 full years.